Hello and welcome to the program UFO Warning. In this episode, we're talking about Battelle and Blue Book. That's correct, Battelle and Blue Book. Now, we're talking about Battelle. We're talking about the Battelle Memorial Institute. This is this nonprofit that we've been talking about the last couple of days, started in 1929 with money gifted to them by the Battelle family. I think actually this thing was incubated since about 1923 or something. It's been around about 100 years. They are into everything, all kinds of technology, whatever you name it. They're into it. And not only that, but from what I've read, they at least manage six national laboratories. It just goes to show how these for-profit, how these nonprofit companies have integrated themselves with the U.S. government, with the Department of Defense, with the military, everything else. And they've created this space. This is a space where the deep state lives, where you have this intersection between your major universities, okay, your profit/nonprofit companies, and the U.S. government. So you have all the power of the government, you have all the resources of these companies and the government, and then you have the knowledge supplied to the stuff from the universities. And in that space somewhere, that intersection, I think, is where you find the deep state. That group of people that does what they want, when they want, without consideration for any of the rest of us. Now, this article is from enigmalabs.io. That's enigmalabs.io. They don't have a specific author written down here, just Enigma Labs. The date on this says that it was updated May 2nd, 2023, and they start off with this little summary about how Battelle put together this report for the DoD on UFOs. So basically what they were saying was, yeah, 20% of these things are actual UFOs, but they don't appear to be anything that's not man-made. Of course, this is nonsense. That's gaslighting. That's when you're out there, you're looking up in the sky, you see a flying saucer, and Battelle's saying, yep, you saw a flying saucer. Nope, it's nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing that couldn't have been made by man. So they're just feeding you a bald-faced lie to your face, gaslighting you. Right as you look at the truth, they're telling you, no, that's not the truth. So that's the technique right there. It's a very powerful psychological technique used to control people. Okay, this says summary. In 1953, a team of researchers finished a statistical analysis of 3,201 UAP reports. Now, for the rest of this article, I'm not going to use the word UAP. It's too annoying. I'm going to use the word we've always used, UFO. In 1953, a team of researchers finished a statistical analysis of 3,201 UFO reports from the files of the U.S. Air Force's Aerial Phenomena Group, which went by the codename Project Blue Book. Well, it wasn't an Aerial Phenomena Group. It was a UFO group. Okay, let's get that straight. The analysis remains among the largest studies of its kind and represents the height of the U.S. Air Force's effort to investigate post-World War II UFO mystery. I like the article, but I don't think it's helpful to go back and change verbiage from 70, 80 years ago to fit our new culture. This heightened effort, led largely by U.S. Air Force Captain Edward J. Ruppelt, began shortly before a major shifting wave, before a major sighting wave, and ended after the so-called Robertson Panel, a four-day CIA-convened review of UFO evidence by several prominent scientists. Yeah, that's who we want reviewing this stuff, is the CIA. The panel strongly recommended the Air Force against pursuing the mystery any further. So there you go. The CIA says, nope, don't want to investigate this stuff. In May 1955, after a delay of over 2 years, the Air Force released a version of the statistical analysis in, quote, Blue Book Special Report Number 14. The analysis showed that despite best efforts, one out of five of Blue Book cases remained unexplained. However, the report found it highly improbable that the unexplained cases were evidence of technology beyond contemporary capabilities. Well, then what would you call it? During the gap between the completion and the release of the study, the Air Force reassigned Ruppelt and ended Blue Book's investigative efforts. Maybe he got to looking a little too hard, and they just didn't want him to see anything. It goes on here. It says, in December 1951, Ruppelt, an Air Force intelligence officer, visited the Battelle Memorial Institute, a science and technology research nonprofit in Columbus, Ohio. Ruppelt, who was 3 months on the job as the director of U.S. Air Force's investigative efforts into UFO, had recently gotten approval for a large-scale statistical analysis of the Air Force's UFO reports. The approval stipulated that he contract the job to a civilian organization. There you go. Can't do it ourselves. Can't do it in-house. Go out and find a civilian organization. Well, sure, there's all kinds of those out there just investigating UFOs in 1940 or 1951, aren't there? How convenient. Battelle took on the contract, guaranteeing Rupert that it would devote statisticians, astronomers, engineers, physicists, and psychologists to the analysis. Battelle also proposed developing a standardized reporting form that could be memorialized on IBM punch cards, thereby creating a database that was searchable through an index of a few dozen sighting characteristics. 3 weeks later, Battelle personnel traveled with Ripple to investigate a sighting near Minneapolis in order to get a handle on the nature of the UFO reports, and soon after, the analysis that would become Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14 got underway. Gotta wonder what they got paid for that, huh? The analysis, however, had a pair of ill-fated predecessors. And it goes on, talks about Sign and Grudge. And by 1951, Air Force intelligence had twice tackled the UFO mystery. The first effort was Project Sign, and the second was Project Grudge. Both Sign and Grudge produced reports that attempted first to evaluate UFO as a weapon threat, and second to reduce public speculation around UFO. In both regards, Sign and Grudge fared poorly. Now, you've had this whole thing with UFOs were lighting people up. They were waking up. They were thinking, hey, there's something going on here. Maybe the trust level in the government is going down a little bit. Can't have that. The sheep are distracted. The sheep need to eat grass and make wool. In the spring of 1947, reports of strange aerial phenomena began to trickle in from around the U.S. to the Air Force Intelligence Office. The Air Material Command, that's AMC, at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. Convenient, same state as Battelle. The reports described glowing orbs, cylinders, and discs at turns hovering and speeding around across the sky. In June, the reports spiked 47 in 2 weeks. On the 24th of that month, a civilian pilot named Kenneth Arnold allegedly spotted 9 of the disc-shaped variety over Mount Rainier, Washington. The press reported flying saucers and the name stuck. America's post-war UFO craze had begun. Well, yes, people were seeing these things, and they were seeing them all over the country. And then it goes on, it says, on January 7th, 1948, the craze became deadly serious when Captain Thomas Mantell, a pilot with the Kentucky National Guard, fatally crashed a fighter plane after chasing a strange metallic object upward into the sky. And we've talked about that case before. Wouldn't probably hurt to do it again. Then it says, 2 weeks later, the Air Force created Project Sign, an intelligence effort to determine whether UAP or an aerial threat from the USSR or another hostile party. In February of 1949, after digging into 273 reported sightings, Sign issued its report. As to whether UAP were Soviet weapons, Sign was unsure. However, the report said 20% of the 273 UFO sightings remained identified after analysis, meaning that they were not really attributable to misidentification or natural phenomena, known technology, psychosis, or hoax. So 20% can't explain. In an effort to quell public speculation around UFOs, the Air Force gave journalist Sidney Chalet for the Saturday Evening Post access to Sign personnel and high-ranking Air Force officers. When Chalet's April and May 1949 two-part feature, What You Can Believe About Flying Saucers, concluded that UFO were nothing more than atomic psychosis. Oh, that's good. A form of Cold War, mass hysteria. The article had confirmed Air Force interest in UFO. A record wave of civilian reports of UFO incidents to the Air Force ensued. So here you go. You have this big nonprofit corporation, Battelle. You've got the Department of Defense, U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, actually here, and then you are mixing that up with mainstream media. And mainstream media, they come out there like a good little dog, and they do exactly what they're told. They call everybody victims of mass psychosis, mass hysteria. You're all a bunch of sheep. Put your head down, eat grass, make wool. Goes on here, says Grudge. Behind the scenes, the Air Force revived Sign, renaming it Project Grudge. Boy, with a name like Project Grudge, what could go wrong? Grudge called on analysts from the RAND Corporation. This is something we got to do a deep dive into, because these are another OG corporation. Been around for a long time. happily mixed in with the DOD so thoroughly you can hardly tell the two apart. The U.S. Air Force's Aero Medical Laboratory and Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the head of the astronomy department at Ohio State University, to examine another 226 recently reported UFO incidents. On December 27, 1949, the Air Force released Grudge's findings to the press. Once again, the residual of unidentified flying objects remained high at 1 in 5 of study cases. Nevertheless, the Air Force again characterized UFOs as misidentification coupled with a mild form of mass hysteria and war nerves. I guess that's a new psychiatric illness that they've come up with, war nerves. Publicly, the Air Force shut down Grudge. The project, however, continued on in a secret and radically diminished capacity. That is, until a sighting compelled the Air Force to reopen its investigation. On September 10, 1951, an unidentified flying object at over 700 miles per hour appeared on the radar at the U.S. Army base at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. Within 15 minutes, two pilots in the air nearby spotted beneath a strange silver object of approximately 50 feet in diameter. Allegedly, the object then sped out over the ocean at an estimated 1,000 miles per hour. On the following day, the object seemed to reappear on Fort Monmouth's radar. It's like it's toying with these guys. Shortly after the Monmouth incident, the Air Force's Intelligence Office, the Air Technical Intelligence Center, that's ATIC, successor to the AMC at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, assigned Captain Edward J. Rupert, a aeronautical engineer and World War II Pacific Theater bombardier, to revive Project Grudge. So they went out, they found a World War II vet, and they're like, look, we got to get this project going again. Rupelt immediately went through the sign and grudge files, brought on more personnel, ordered monthly reports, and got a compulsory UFO report policy instituted across the Air Force. He also contracted with both the physicist Joseph Kaplan to develop a telescope camera to detect UFO, and with Cambridge Research Laboratory for a similar device that worked by sound. So here we have another one, Cambridge Research Library. You start to see how these private corporations are just thick as thieves here with the DOD. Can you see what's going on here? Most notably, as mentioned before, Rupel engaged the Battelle Memorial Institute for a statistical analysis of UFO sightings. In March 1952, ATIC rechristened Grudge as Project Blue Book, officially the Aerial Phenomena Group. Neither Rupel, Battelle, or Blue Book's personnel could anticipate the meteoric rise of their data set. And then it says the 1952 wave. Just before midnight on July 19, 1952, radar at the Washington National Airport caught readings of 7 UFO near Washington, D.C. Air traffic control radioed Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland, advising that the UFO were headed south their way. According to account of the night from Rupel, radar at Andrews clocked one of the objects at 7,000 miles per hour. So think about that, more than 10 times the speed of sound. Within the next few hours, the UFO would allegedly crisscross the D.C. area. Onlookers from the ground and several pilots in commercial planes would report the bright objects maneuvering in the restricted airspace over the Capitol building and the White House. At one point, tower operators at Andrews reportedly saw a huge, fiery orange sphere hovering over them. Well, you know, they talk about the UFO landing on the White House lawn. Maybe they just want to fly over it. I don't know. In the following week, similar reports with visual and radar confirmation of UAP occurred from Virginia to New Jersey. On July 26, UFO reappeared on radar covering Washington, D.C. The Air National Guard at Newcastle, Delaware scrambled jets. The pilots made visual contact. The UFO reportedly disappeared, and when the pilots turned back for base, the UFO allegedly returned. Already, UFO sightings were on the rise. In 1952, Blue Book had received 149 reports, a record high. In July, the tally went up to 536. By the end of the year, Blue Book received 1,501 UFO sighting reports. The volume of reports contributed to an attitudinal shift of one of Blue Book's key contributors, the astronomer Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Well, somebody got red-pilled. In October 1952, Hynek traveled to Boston, Massachusetts to a gathering of the American Optical Society. At that point, Hynek had been a civilian scientific consultant to the Air Force for 4 years, first under Project Grudge and now Blue Book. In the early days, his job, as he and his superiors understood it, was to go through the reports, pick out where someone had confused Venus, for example, with a flying saucer, and in this manner consign the vast majority of cases to witness error. In other words, deperson the experiencers and the witnesses. Those most weird reports that he could not demolish by explanation, he'd dismiss as cases for the psychologist, he said. How awful. How awful that our own government treated its citizens this way. To accuse you of having a mental illness because you simply saw something you couldn't explain in the sky. Recently, though, he'd begun to think differently of the whole enterprise. He said, within the recent volumes of cases, certain patterns have become undeniable. Hundreds of witnesses had alleged that lighted objects in the early sky were hovering, creeping, reversing direction, turning at sharp angles, changing from one color to the next, and disappearing at impossible speeds. Hynek said, although these nocturnal meandering lights did not fit the description of any natural phenomena or known technology, and the witnesses were not unreliable or stupid, they weren't intellectual flyweights and bird brains. They were often pilots and radar technicians, he said, and as a rule, were not seeking publicity. To date, Hynek said the scientific community had met these reports, as he once did, with dismissal and ridicule. Hynek urged his audience to open their minds and engage the unexplained phenomena as an opportunity for science. Ridicule is not part of the scientific method, he said, and the public should not be taught that it is. A few months later, Hynek and Ruppelt would make a similar case to a panel of scientists secretly convened in Washington, D.C. The panel would remain unconvinced. Well, they are convinced of doing one thing, and that is covering this stuff up. It goes on, it says, on January 14th through 18th, 1953, a panel of distinguished scientists with military experience secretly convened in Washington, D.C. at the request of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency to review evidence from Blue Book and determine whether UAP posed a security threat. Now, wait a minute. I thought the CIA was only supposed to work outside of the United States. Doesn't look that way, does it? The panel was led by Dr. Howard Page Robertson, mathematician and astronomer, and included Drs. Thornton Page, physicist, and astronomer Samuel Goldsmith, Luis Alvarez, and both physicist, and Lloyd Bricker, a physicist and radar expert. Ruppelt briefed the panel on Blue Book investigators and presented footage of the alleged UFO film by Navy photographers that underwent as much as 1,000 hours of frame-by-frame analysis. So we have more than just the Tic Tac video, folks. Hynek presented evidence from the yet-incomplete Battelle analysis, referring to it as Project Stork in the panel's minutes. Reportedly, Battelle analysis had requested a month earlier that their study not be presented as methodological problems remained, and Battelle further urged that the sounder conclusions would result from an experimental study that compared observations from specified areas of the sky. Hynek was an associate member of the panel, also presented a plan similar to Battelle's proposal, arguing that cameras under development by the physicist Joseph Kaplan could, if affixed to six specific observatories, provide a nationwide visual UAP detection mechanism. Now they got Project Gremlin, where they want to put around photographing devices all over the place where they can just put up a nationwide spy work. That'll be fun, won't it? Major Dewey Fornit, an aeronautical engineer and the Pentagon's liaison officer to Blue Book, presented further evidence and argued that maneuvers observed by UAP UFO indicated intelligent control. Fornit argued by process of elimination that the intelligence should be extraterrestrial. Finally, Brigadier General William Garland, chief of the Air Technical Intelligence Center, argued that UFO investigations should be declassified and that the Blue Book should continue on with a substantially larger staff. So here you have Blue Book being done somewhat as a public service, but we don't want that because we can't control the data enough. It says conclusions and standards of evidence. Altogether, over the course of 12 hours, the panel reviewed 8 UFO incidents in detail and discussed 15 cases in more general terms. From this study, the panel concluded that no direct evidence demonstrated that UFO were a threat to U.S. security. But that's all we hear today is that they're a threat to U.S. security, and that's why they need more money. Interesting. In reaching its conclusion, the panel had applied a strict standard of evidence. The existence of truly unexplainable aerial phenomena would require a fundamental revision of scientific concepts, the panel said. So, to assert that UFO are genuine, rather than misidentifications and hoaxes, required evidence of the highest order, they said. A new phenomenon to be accepted, the panel said, must be completely and convincingly documented. In other words, a burden of proof is on the citer, not on the explainer. Do you see the setup right there? People are saying, well, I've seen something, I can't identify it. Well, we're not going to talk about us until you can explain the UFO. See, that's not our job. Our job's not to explain it, okay? The job to explain it falls on the experts that we pay a gazillion dollars in taxes to. But they're just turning that equation up on its head. If they were interested in explaining these things, they wouldn't send us reams of blacked out pages, okay? Ruppelt later described the panel's approach as a search for loopholes in all evidence presented. Scientific evaluation has no room for even the smallest of loopholes, he said, and we had asked for a scientific evaluation. Ruppelt, however, did not see the panel's report and was under the impression that they ultimately encouraged further investigation of UFOs. According to UFO historian Dr. David Jacobs, based on a review of Ruppelt's correspondence, CIA agents directly told both Ruppelt and Garland that Blue Book would go on with more staff and less secrecy. They say one thing and do another. The panel, in fact, had proposed the opposite. You mean the CIA lied to these guys? Wow, I can't believe it. While UFOs did not constitute a direct threat, widespread public speculation over UFOs posed a serious danger to the U.S., the panel had said. Mass hysteria surrounding UFO craze was overloading emergency reporting channels with false information and leaving the country at greater vulnerability to possible enemy psychological warfare, the panel said. Now, think about that. They're telling you that you can't know about UFOs, you shouldn't even talk about UFOs, and you shouldn't report them because you're overloading the emergency response system. We don't want to investigate these things because it's a security risk. But wait a minute, Louis Elizondo said that we weren't investigating these things because high-up evangelical Christians were stopping him from investigating. Poor little Louis could investigate because the big, bad, meanie Christians wouldn't let him. But if you go back to the beginning, in 1954 here or whatever, 53, the CIA is saying, don't investigate these things. They're too much of a hassle. Not the bad evangelical Christians. The CIA, Louis, that's who says not to investigate these things. And they've been the ones blocking investigation all along, I think. It goes on down here. It says, to reduce public interest in UFOs, the government should carry out a public education propaganda through mass media, such as television, movies, magazine articles, to dispel the UFO mystery. Now, there you go. That's your CIA telling you, hey, we need to educate the people, wink, wink, nod, nod. The use of true cases, first showing the mystery and then the explanation, would be forceful, the panel said. The panel suggested that the CIA enlist the help of experts in mass psychology to create content of maximum effect. But wait a minute. Up until Obama, wasn't it illegal for the government to use mass propaganda on citizens of the United States? Wasn't that supposed to be reserved for foreign countries? Kind of like an act of war, but here they are using this act of war on us to convince us that UFOs aren't real? Tell me there's not a deep state, please. Finally, the panel recommended that the CIA closely monitor civilian UFO investigation groups, specifically the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, or APRO, and the Civilian Flying Saucer Investigators. Really? That's what the CIA has time to do? Is investigate a bunch of hobbyists that like to talk about UFOs? Are they a national security threat? Well, maybe they're a threat to the CIA and all these other alphabet agencies. Maybe they'll stumble across something that shows that our own government has been colluding with these things. Maybe. Maybe that's what they're so worried about. Otherwise, why would they care about investigating some guy sitting at home in his living room in 1954 talking about UFOs and flying saucers? It doesn't it seem like it'd be just a lot easier to call that guy a nut and move on? How important is it to them to keep this stuff secret if in 1954 they're investigating hobbyists? In the middle of the Korean War, I think, the apparent irresponsibility and the possible use of such groups for subversive purposes should be kept in mind, the panel said. Oh, yes, the guys at home in the Flying Saucer Club are going to use their flying saucer pics for subversive purposes. You know what's subversive? Your own government spying on you because you said, "Hey, I saw a flying saucer." So that's a pot calling the kettle black. It says in 1953, following the Robertson panel and its recommendation, the Air Force performed an about-face with regard to investigating UFOs. In February 1953, the Air Force issued Regulation 200-2, which said that airmen may only respond to local inquiries on UFO incidents when Air Force intelligence has positively identified the alleged UFO as a familiar object. That same month, Ruppelt was temporarily reassigned away from Blue Book. When he returned in July 1953, he found that his staff was gone, save for two assistants. Additionally, higher-ups had rejected plans for UFO detection devices from Kaplan and the Cambridge Research Laboratory. Ruppelt looked over the new reports, but the wave that had characterized 1952 was over. In July 1953, Blue Book fielded only 21 UFO sightings. More importantly, according to Ruppelt, a commanding officer, General Woodbury M. Burgess, told him that while Blue Book could receive reports, it no longer investigates. From now on, investigations would go to the newly operational Air Force Intelligence Service Squadron out of Colorado. In the following month, Ruppelt left Blue Book. That's why every time they come up with one of these new UFO investigative agencies, I just say forget about it. In December, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff further tightened the flow of UFO information. In a publication to the Army, Navy, and Air Force, the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that any military personnel or civilian who releases classified UAP information was liable under the Espionage Act for a year in prison and a $10,000 fine. Meanwhile, Battelle had finished its analysis of 3,201 Blue Book cases. Though the Battelle analysis wrapped up in 1953, its findings were not circulated to Blue Book that year. Eventually, the report came out internally in May 1955 as Blue Book Special Report Number 14, which was made public in the following October. As with the reports from Sine and Grudge, the Battelle analysis found that a substantial number of UFO incidents resisted explanation as either misidentification or natural phenomena or known technology or as products of hoax or psychological delusion. The analysts deemed these cases unknown. They represented 21.5% of the cases studied. From an initial database of roughly 4,000 cases, Battelle converted 3,201 cases into IBM punch cards that memorialized 33 characteristics such as color, brightness, number of UFO, shape, duration of sighting, and speed. Analysts developed ratings for witnesses' credibility, taking into account occupation, training, consistency, and thoroughness of details and attitudes. Each UFO incident was available for study from four analysts. If the first two analysts on a case agreed on a prosaic explanation, such as misidentification of clouds or seagulls, the sighting was deemed solved. Unknown cases, however, came with a higher standard and required agreement from four analysts, two from Battelle and two from the Air Technical Intelligence Center. In determining cases, analysts rated their decisions as either certain or doubtful. Just over half of the solved cases were certain, and about 30% were doubtful. In contrast, 100% of the unknown cases were rated certain. Yeah, they certainly saw something, didn't they? Solved cases represented 62.9% of the 3,201 cases, with misidentification of astronomical phenomena and aircraft as the leading culprits, and 9.3% of the cases represented insufficient evidence for determination. Of the 3,201 cases, only 48, or 1.5%, were deemed to be the result of delusion or hoax. Think about that, 1.5%. Now, they've been telling you that 100% were delusion or hoax. The vast majority of cases, the report said, came from serious people mystified by what they had seen and motivated by patriotic responsibility. As for a conclusion, Special Report Number 14 echoed Sine, Grudge, and the Robertson panel, finding that UFO were likely not signs of unknown technology. So there you go. Battelle, for all the good work they did, to statistically analyze this stuff, they're still not going to admit that these things are extra-dimensional or extraterrestrial. It is considered highly improbable, the report said, that reports of unidentified aerial objects represent observations of technological developments outside the range of present-day scientific knowledge. Sure, 7,000 miles an hour, zigzagging, coming to an immediate stop. Sounds normal. Special report number 14 runs 316 pages and contains dozens of graphs and hundreds of data tablets. Throughout, the report makes note that all sightings are eyewitness accounts and less than ideal with regard to establishing the physical nature of the phenomena. It must be emphasized again and again, the report said, that any conclusions contained in this report are based not on facts, but on what many observers thought and estimated the true facts to be. The delayed report, which captured data from the 1952 wave, represented the height of the Air Force's investigation into UFOs. More than a decade would pass before anyone would carry out a UFO study of like ambition. Just amazing. And then they had the sources list here. Just an outstanding article. It really does a good job of explaining Battelle's role in this Blue Book study. Kind of gives you an idea about the company. A lot of smart people doing a lot of good work. But even after they put this really a fantastic study together, the conclusions that they reach, I think, were conclusions that they were forced to reach. That these things aren't extraterrestrial, that they're not from another dimension. They don't know where they're from. They just can't be from someplace else. Of course, we know this is just not true on the face of it. Until next time, this is UFO Warning, over and out.